Roundtable Podcasts, underwritten by Proctors, the Capital Region's premier performing arts center featuring the best in entertainment from Broadway and around the globe. Proctors.org.
Journalist Ron Berler spent a full year at Brookside Elementary in Norwalk, Connecticut, sitting in on classes, strategy sessions, and even faculty meetings. He was there for the first day of a new school year as the school took another chance to improve its failing scores on the annual statewide standardized test known as the CMT. In his new book, Raising the Curve, Belber introduces us to the teachers and the students and the staff who make up the Brookside community. Though their school is classified as failing, like so many others across the country, they never give up on themselves or in one another. In his portrait, he captures their concerns as well as really their pride and their resilience and their faith that it will get better. Ron Belber joins us on the roundtable this morning. Ron, thank you very much for being with us. I appreciate it.
Thanks for having me. It's Ron Berler.
I apologize. It's Ron Berler. Ron, good morning.
Hey, how are you?
I'm fine. Thank you very much. I apologize.
Okay.
This is what happens when I ride on the train at midnight. Okay, so you go into the schools and you go into Brookside Elementary, and you go in knowing that this is a school that is failing. So I assume that the overall question you have is why and what can be done.
Yeah, you know. In March 2011, the U.S. Secretary of Education, Arne Duncan, said 82% of U.S. schools could be failing by the end of 2012. I mean, that's a crazy number. You know, and I started wondering, are our schools that bad? And I decided to see how a failing school, or what we call a failing school, functions. So I spent a year at Brookside, and for your listeners who don't know, Norwalk is a small, diverse city of 85,000, where all 19 of its schools are failing. And what I came out with was the story of two fifth-grade Brookside girls, best friends, but very different types of students, their teacher, the school's literacy specialist, and the principal, and the daily struggles all face dealing with the pressures brought on by No Child Left Behind.
So these are, when you talk to the administrators and the teachers, and you ask them the direct question, okay, your scores are bad, what's causing it? The most common answer you get back is what?
Well, the most common answer I get back is, you know, it's Brookside is squeezed on one side by, you know, federal and state expectations, on the other side by local budget tightening, and meanwhile they still have to service kids who are disadvantaged by poverty, by ethnicity, by family dysfunction, and they find themselves often forced to make short-term compromises. And act sometimes for the benefit of the school and the district before they act for the child. This is a school of 500 or so kids. 57% are Hispanic, 21% are white, 18% are black, and 59% are impoverished enough that they qualify for reduced fee or free school lunches. I mean, these are kids with a lot going against them from the start. And a lot of what's affecting them is external. And there's a great deal of frustration by teachers and administrators that there's only so much they can do, or they're hampered by what they can do. And one of the things that hampers them is this constant prepping for these standardized tests.
I want to get into that in just a second. Can we talk, before we do, just as a baseline, on your feelings about the standards in which we operate in general, in the sense of, are the expectations too high? Are the reason we are failing because we're expecting too much?
Well, that's tricky again. In Connecticut, the Connecticut Mastery Test, which is aligned or supposedly aligned with No Child Left Behind, the state of Connecticut has set it up so that it raises its standard for what is considered passing by about 10% every 2 years. So say a school gets, like, say a school is like 2% below passing. They gain 10%, but they're still 2% behind. They can never catch up. It's a very, very difficult challenge for schools, and it's quite a step to move that far forward. It's made all the difficult by this. Suppose that you have a fifth grade kid, and that child enters your fifth grade class reading at a high second grade level, and that, sadly, is not all that uncommon. Now, you as the teacher, over the course of the school year, or not even over the course, you bring that kid up to, say, a high fourth grade level reading. Now, that's a year and a half jump in reading. And yet, on the standardized test, that kid and that teacher will fail because it's set to a fifth grade level, and they get no credit for making that jump. I mean, that's, you know, something's wrong there, and it's actually why, you know, Connecticut last year got a waiver from No Child Left Behind so that they could make their own standards. And one of those things was to finally enable both students and teachers to get credit for the progress that they do make.
You write in the book a lot about teaching to the test. And one of the things, and I find this fascinating, it makes sense, I guess, why you do it, but you see where the problem lies, obviously, which is that there is so much pressure for the schools like Brookside to pass these tests that they take a group of students that they feel are on the borderline, and they try like hell to get them to boost their scores. So these are daily intensive instructions. But that comes at a cost, because meanwhile, you in some ways are ignoring the rest of the student body.
Yeah, it's a shame, isn't it? There's so much emphasis on getting that school over the hump, which of course they haven't been able to do yet, that they ignore a large portion of the student body, and it's more than you would just think. To pass the test, to focus on passing the test, the teachers and the administrators concentrate their efforts on the vast middle group of kids who, you know, probably can pass or are close to, and then those kids who are on the cusp, who, you know, with some extra scaffolding might get pushed over the top, might help push the school into passing. But there are a lot of groups left out, and they include the kids who really need help, who have no chance of passing the CMT. And since they're not going to pass, well, you know, why give them the attention when you could, you know, pay attention to kids who might pass? Those kids get no attention. On the other end, the advanced children, those who are guaranteed to pass, well, they're not paid attention to either, because they don't have to, the school doesn't have to worry about them. They run the danger of growing bored, of stagnating, of not progressing as quickly as they are capable of. Then finally, the concentration is specifically on third, fourth, and fifth graders, those who take the test. And when I say concentration, in the case of Brookside, I'm talking about 22% of the school year, 9 weeks from January 2nd, when kids come back from Christmas break, till now when the testing is going on at the beginning of March. Excuse me. In that time, while they're prepping these third, fourth, and fifth graders, there is no special service in literacy given to kindergartners, first or second graders.
You talk in keeping in mind kindergartners, because you touched on this, but I want to go back to it, because I think it's interesting that just this past school year, Brookside gives an academic readiness test. 48 kids coming in. Four. Out of the 48, four qualified as prepared. So you're already starting at a deficit. So what do you do about that of starting the kids out at a good place? Because otherwise, you're already running three laps behind.
You're right. Now, I want to correct something. It's 38% of entering kindergartners weren't prepared. But and they weren't prepared on things like, can you spell your first name? Can you count to 10? Can you tell the difference between a lower and an uppercase letter? Can you draw, trace four shapes? On one or more of those questions, 38%, almost 40% failed. And the question is, if they're failing at that point, when they're walking in the school, before they've ever taken a class, how can you ever, how can you blame the schools or the teachers? At some point, and we don't discuss this enough, we need to focus on parental involvement. That is a key component in education, and one that we are really glossing over. I mean, I mentor a child, a seventh grader now, who graduated from Brookside a couple of years ago. His parents came here from Mexico in 1999, 14 years ago. They have yet to learn the language. This child will go through his entire school experience never once being able to say, Mom, Dad, can you help me with my homework? That's an incredible disadvantage. But it's not just Hispanics who can't speak English. This cuts across all classes and races. Just think of all the people who come home after a long, tough day at work. They're pooped, and all they want to do is have dinner and sit down and chill in front of the TV and maybe watch a ball game or, you know, watch a sitcom. And they don't read to their kid at night. And they don't have their kid read to them. And they don't use flashcards to help their child learn his multiplication tables. Or maybe they help their child, but they get frustrated when the child isn't working quickly enough. And they provide the answers, but without explaining the how and the why. There are so many ways in which parents can do a more complete job to work in concert with our teachers to get the most out of their children. That's what we need to do.
And that parental involvement is so important, and it is, but it's something, do the schools have to get involved a year or two before?
Well, you know, one of the things that struck me about President Obama's State of the Union speech was the emphasis that he placed on the need to provide quality preschool education for poor and middle-class people. And, you know, every single study that you look, he's absolutely right, every single study you look at shows that kindergarten, first grade, second grade, those are the key building block years of education. If you have a kid who's behind in the first grade, with relatively little scaffolding, you can bring that kid back up to grade level. But once you get to the fourth or fifth or eighth grade, boy, that is a real challenge at that point. Very difficult task to bring a kid up. So what we need is to take the money that we do have and apply it much more to early childhood education. That's the most important place we can do it. But the caveat being that it also has to be combined with parental involvement.
Raising the Curve is Ron Berler's new book. It is published by Berkeley. Ron, thank you very much for being with us this morning. I appreciate it.
Joe, it's been my pleasure. Thanks.
Thank you very much. You're listening to The Roundtable on WAMC.